Imagine you're in the lab, trying to tune a really complex piece of machinery, maybe a high-speed assembly robot or the adaptive suspension on some kind of specialized vehicle,
okay.
And you realize the entire system's performance, its accuracy, its ride comfort, everything, it all hinges on just one single parameter.
Stiffness.
Exactly, stiffness. And not just one fixed value, but one you need to change, you know, rapidly and reliably.
And that's really why these tunable mounts have become so critical for modern R&D.
Right.
When you're trying to validate a new design or you're collecting just tons of training data for an AI controller, you have to simulate dozens of scenarios.
And you can't be swapping out physical parts all day.
No, you can't. So if you can use a tunable element that lets you make fast, low-effort changes,
yeah,
you're not just saving time. You're accelerating the entire R&D cycle.
Okay, so let's unpack this deep dive. We're looking at a really fascinating study on a mechanical stiffness tuning mechanism from Fraunhofer LBF.
A very powerful mechanism. But, I mean, the core question is durability.
Right. What good is all that tunability if the component just fails after a few hundred cycles?
Precisely. So our mission today is to explore how they really rigorously figured out the durability limits for this element.
And the material they're looking at is a big deal in itself.
It is, because it's a real workhorse of industry.
Yeah.
Hardened spring steel sheet.
Yeah.
CD5S plus QT, to be specific.
That's a material with a really hefty tensile strength. What is it, between 1320 and 1520 newtons per square millimeter?
Yeah, it's strong stuff. And because it's a standard high-performance material, the results we're going to talk about are, you know, super relevant to what people are already doing.
Right, this isn't some theoretical, exotic material.
Not at all.
Okay, let's get into the mechanics of it. The concept here is, well, it sounds almost deceptively simple. They tune it by changing the effective length of a bending beam.
Mm-hmm.
Can you sort of paint a picture for us? How does that work physically?
It's a really elegant design. You have an inner component and an outer component, and they're connected by this spring element that follows a circular path. So the magic knob, if you will, is the clamping position of that outer component. It's defined by an angle, which they call profess.
So by changing that angle, you're changing the free length of the spring arms.
You got it. A shorter free length gives you higher stiffness. A longer free length.
Lower stiffness. Yeah. Simple as that. Okay, that makes it much clearer. And for their tests, they focused on a single spring element with three arms, right?
Okay. And they varied two key factors.
The geometry.
First, the spring sheet thickness. So either 1.5 millimeters or 3 millimeters. And second, that slider position angle.
And they went for the extremes there.
They did. 30 degrees for the stiff, short beam setup, and 100 degrees for the soft, long beam one. Those four combinations gave them the edge cases they needed.
So what kind of torture did they actually put these springs through?
Well, they used fully reversed cyclic loading. That's a load ratio of R equals minus one.
So it's being pulled and pushed with equal force.
Exactly. Maximizes the stress, gives you the widest possible test range. They ran it under displacement control until it either failed or it hit 2 million cycles.
Which they defined as the runout limit.
Mm-hmm.
But defining failure here is really interesting. It isn't just waiting for a crack, is it?
No. And that's a crucial point for any adaptive system. The element fails functionally long before it breaks apart.
It stops doing its job properly.
Right. So they monitor the degradation by tracking the drop-in force amplitude. And the failure criterion they landed on was a 10% drop in spring stiffness.
10%. That feels practical, but I guess in a safety critical system, you'd want zero degradation, wouldn't you?
Well, you would, but that's often just unachievable in high cycle scenarios.
Mm.
The 10% threshold is really the point where the mount's function, its ability to manage vibration at a target frequency, is significantly compromised.
So it's a standard conservative threshold for this kind of thing.
It is. Good context.
Okay, now let's get to the results. This is where the mechanism really, really shines. I mean, the numbers are just astonishing.
The range of tunability is what validates the whole approach. It just shows how adaptable a single device can be.
So let's break down those extremes. The stiffest case they measured, that was the thick 3.0 millimeter sheet at that tight 30 degree angle.
And that gave them an average stiffness of 531 newtons per millimeter. That's a very robust mount.
Now, contrast that with the softest case.
That was the thin 1.5 millimeter sheet at the widest angle, 100 degrees.
And the stiffness there was.
It's 40.23 newtons per millimeter.
So that's almost a 145-fold change in stiffness just from adjusting a couple of parameters. That's a real aha moment for any designer.
It is. But achieving that range puts massive stress on the steel. So the next question is, where did it consistently give out?
And they found a very consistent answer.
Very. Out of 36 specimens tested, 27 of them failed at the exact same spot. The notch radius, right where the spring arm meets the inner ring. The crack started there and just went straight through the thickness.
And that consistency is gold for engineers, right? Yeah. It tells you exactly where to look.
It absolutely does. It confirms that the fatigue life depends on the thickness and that angle, because those are what drive the stress right at that notch.
Which leads us perfectly into, I think, the most practical part of this whole study. The design workflow they came up with.
You sure
did. The shortcut. Because you just can't afford to run a complex finite element analysis, an FEA, for every single idea you have.
It's too slow, too expensive. You need a fast way to just throw out the bad ideas right away.
Exactly. So first they tackled stiffness. They developed an analytical model for the total stiffness, K-total. They treated it as a series of connected springs.
So you have the spring arm itself, the spacer clamping.
And the stiffness of all the other force transmitting parts, which they called KFTS. Now, that last one, the stiffness of the rest of the structure, KFTS. That sounds like a tiny detail, but the data showed it was actually critical, didn't it?
Oh, it's where the real-world measurements totally change the game. Usually you'd assume that KFTS is negligible, especially in soft setups.
You just ignore it.
You'd ignore it. But they found in the stiffest configuration, the 3mm 30-degree case, it made a huge difference.
How huge?
The measured stiffness was a massive 23% lower than what the ideal FEA model predicted.
Wow. So if a designer just ignored it, their stiffest designs would fail way earlier than they thought.
Way earlier. So they actually calculated a value for it. 25,311 newtons per millimeter. And you have to include that number for your model to be accurate in those high stiffness settings.
So they nailed the stiffness model. Then they needed a similar shortcut for the fatigue strength.
Right. And they developed a two-tiered system for that, using SN curves.
An SN curve just plots stress against the number of cycles to failure. It's the backbone of fatigue design.
Exactly. So tier one is for that quick pre-dimensioning stage.
It's a back-of-the-envelope calculation.
Kind of. It uses simplified algebraic equations based only on simple geometric parameters, thickness, width, notch radius, to estimate something they call Mises pseudostress.
So it's a fast estimation tool that lets you avoid firing up the complex FEA software.
You got it. If Tier 1 takes 5 minutes on a spreadsheet and Tier 2 takes 5 hours of compute time, well, you can see the value.
You can instantly discard 90% of the designs that won't work.
Instantly. The resulting SN curve for that pseudo-stress had a knee point stress of 602.1 megapascals and about 318,000 cycles. It lets you optimize geometry really, really fast.
But that 602 MPa curve is just a preliminary estimate. For the final product validation, you need way more confidence.
And that's where Tier 2 comes in. This is the full, complex, highly localized FE model. It computes the actual accurate stress right at the notch root.
Where we already know the failure happens.
Precisely. It takes a lot more power, but it gives you the safety margins you need.
And that final, more accurate curve showed a much higher stress value, right?
It did, yes. Yeah. The knee point stress based on those true notch stresses was 769.7 megapascals at around 291,000 cycles.
So that difference from 602 to nearly 770 MPa, that shows why you need both.
Absolutely. You use the pseudo-stress SN curve for rapid screening, and then you use the higher, more accurate FEA notch stress curve for the final safe design validation.
It's a perfect balance of speed and accuracy.
It really is.
So, to wrap this up then, this study effectively established the durability limits for this tunable spring element. It confirmed that incredible 145-fold stiffness range, and most importantly, it gave engineers a solid two-step design workflow, one that handles both stiffness and durability while also catching those hidden flaws, like the fixture stiffness.
I think the key takeaway is really how they defined and managed failure in an adaptive system, focusing on that 10% stiffness drop instead of a total fracture.
Yeah.
But also, the fact that 27 out of 36 failures happened at that tiny notch radius, it just highlights this one single point of vulnerability.
That consistency is a gift for designers, but it also, I think, prompts the next question. What's the thought we should take away from this?
Well, if the main failure is always confined to that one tiny spot, does that change how we should approach reliability? We have the roadmap for the mount itself now.
So what's the next step?
The question is, how might future designs use new tech, maybe shape memory alloys, or some advanced geometries, but only at that one specific critical location to push the durability even further?
So hyper-focusing on the weak point.
Exactly. Maybe we should be designing for a controlled, localized failure that's easy to inspect and easy to replace, instead of aiming for these huge, monolithic, unbreakable parts. You know, optimizing for maintenance right alongside performance.
That's where the next generation of R&D efficiency really lies.
I think so.